Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. If you're applying to medical school in 2022 to start medical school in 2023, join me Wednesday or Thursday, Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern or Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern at premedworkshop.com. Go register today. I'm going to show you how to tell your story in your application. Again, that's premedworkshop.com. If you are applying to medical school in 2022, be there or be square. The pre-med year, session number 385. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome to the pre-med years. As I mentioned, my name is Dr. Ryan Gray, and I hope you are having an outstanding day. Yes, even in the middle of a pandemic, you can still have outstanding days. And I hope our guest today brings you a little bit of joy and a little bit of encouragement and motivation that no matter what, you can still accomplish your goals, your dreams of becoming a physician. Our guest today took the MCAT 6 times. Our guest today applied to medical school 4 times. Our guest today never gave up. She clawed her way. She fought her way to finally get a medical school acceptance. So with that said, let's go ahead and welcome Taylor. Taylor, welcome to the pre-med years. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to dive into your story. After receiving your email, I knew you were the perfect person to come on the podcast to share your struggles, your success. Let's first get the number out of the way. How many times have you applied to medical school?
4.
How many times have you taken the MCAT?
6.
Are there any other big numbers that we should throw out there just to get them off our chest?
12 interviews.
Awesome. 12 interviews and now at least 2 acceptances as we're recording this. Amazing. 4 application cycles. It was funny, but when I was getting ready to call you, all I could think about rereading your email was LeBron James when he went to the Miami Heat. He's like, not 1, not 2, not 3, right? But those aren't the numbers that you want to be counting in this game. We want everything to just be one and done, but
yes.
You persevered. You are successful now at this point. So I'm excited to dive into your story. Let's start with when you first realized you wanted to be a physician.
Baby Taylor. I always had a high health literacy because my parents are in healthcare. My mom's a doctor and my dad's a nurse. Huh. And I just remember watching the Discovery Health Channel and watching all the medical procedures and the autopsies. I just thought it was so fascinating. Mm-hmm. And then when I was maybe 6 or 7, I was playing at my grandma's house in rural North Carolina, where my dad is from. And we were at her neighbor's yard and we were playing, and all of a sudden, the neighbor comes out and she's like, help, 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 help. My mom's not breathing. And I just remember knowing what my parents did and knowing what I'd seen on TV, like, gotta call my dad, like, he can maybe fix there. And so he called
wait,
me.
Wait, pause for 1 second. I gotta call my dad, right? You said your mom, your mom's a doctor, your dad's a nurse.
Yeah. But,
very interesting. Okay.
Well, because my dad, I just grew up knowing he could fix anything.
Yeah. It's a very typical dad's fix everything.
Yeah. And obviously, like, my mom knew how to do CPR, but because I knew my dad's background, he was in the Air Force.
Okay. Go Air Force.
And he works in the, he's working ER. So it's like, okay, he would know, like, exactly what to do.
He knows what to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not bashing the nurses. They know what to do too. Yeah.
So he called EMS and then he started doing CPR. But because the community is super rural, I knew it was going to take a while for them to get there. And they have little EMS stations, but they're not fully stocked in terms of medical professionals.
Yeah.
And the closest hospital is 20 miles away. So I just remember watching him doing CPR and I was like, she's not going to make it. Like, there's no way.
How old are you at this point?
I think it was 6 or 7, so like second grade. And I was standing there and I thought, oh my gosh, like, this is so cool. Like, I want to do that. But at the same time, I also had this sinking feeling that there's no way. I just knew she wasn't going to make it.
Yeah.
And the EMTs came, or paramedics came, and they worked on her, and then they told her that she didn't make it, and, like, her scream, like, I'll never forget the scream I heard after that, because she lost her mom so suddenly, and it was unexpected. She didn't have time to prepare.
Yeah.
And it didn't really bother me at that age, because I didn't really understand death. Like, I knew what it was, but I wasn't at the age to really conceptualize what it meant.
Yeah.
I just remember thinking, oh, that's so cool. Like, I want to use what I saw on Discovery Health Channel to help people. And my mom's from inner city Baltimore and my dad's from rural community. So, and those different kind of demographics, I just saw a lot of disease burden, and Southeast, like, has a lot of historical issues. And I just wanted to do what I could to not only help my community, but communities like mine, and address disease burden and accessibility to healthcare. So that was, like, my aha moment.
Yeah. For medicine. So relatively young, obviously exposed to healthcare early on with both parents in the healthcare field. At any point in your journey, did you second guess going into medicine? Did you question doctor versus dentist versus physical therapy versus nurse? Like, did you question anything along the way?
It was always, always, always medicine. And I thought dentistry was fascinating, and I still love dentistry. And I think sometimes people underestimate the importance of dental hygiene and how it could kind of lead to other systemic health issues. But I just couldn't see myself, like, only localized to this one area, like the face and whatnot. And during my gazillion trillion trials and taking this exam, like, that kind of made me think, okay, this exam is just knocking me down. Maybe I should consider.
And when you talk about this exam, I'm assuming you're talking about the 6 times you took the MCAT.
Yes, that lovely exam.
That lovely. Thank you, AAMC, for that lovely gift that you've given the world.
And then when I did shadow at dentist, and he's amazing. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't see myself doing it. And I'm also not a quitter. And I just didn't feel good about letting something go that I'd worked so hard for. And allowing an exam to stop me from something I've worked towards for the past, I don't know, 25 years or so.
Did you ever peek at the DAT to see, like, would I do well on this versus the MCAT?
I did. Yeah. And I was like, I know the MCAT, it's problematic, but I know how it works. And with the DAT, it's very different. And
it's a lot of conceptual stuff on the DAT, isn't it?
Yeah. And some of the questions I ask, I was like, they're not ever going to ask that on the MCAT ever.
Because it's not important. Yeah. Okay.
It's not important.
Yeah. So let's go to undergrad choice, major choice, mm-hmm. knowing that you wanted to be a physician. What were those choices? And did you regret those choices? Would you have done anything different looking back on your journey now?
So the crazy thing is, 18-year-old Taylor, she really wanted to go to UCLA or Berkeley. I don't know why. I just had this fascination with wanting to go to school in California. And my parents were like, no, Taylor, you're not going to school there. And I like fought them on it. But at the same time, I kind of started to understand the importance of like what school you end up going to. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to go to Duke University because in the South, football and basketball, it's important. And like I couldn't go to a school that didn't have a D1 sports team. So I ended up going there because 8th grade Taylor wanted to go to Duke, and I knew they had a really good pre-med curriculum. It was going to be difficult, and being an underrepresented woman of color, I thought it would help me going to a prestigious university. Mm-hmm. And college was hard, not because I wasn't prepared for it. It was more along the lines that it wasn't what I expected. And that I took a lot of AP classes in high school and I thought, oh yes, college is going to be just like this. I'm going to be fine. It was not. And like the first 2 years, it was horrible. Like
in what way? Just the amount of studying, the lack of organization, and like, here's the syllabus. It's all up to you to go do it all. Or what was it?
It was that. Two things. As a person of color, I didn't want to make it seem like I knew less than my peers, and I didn't want to ask for help. And I also thought that was a sign of weakness. And then I was the type of person that just wanted to figure things out herself. Mm-hmm. And that was detrimental because I was struggling so much especially in calculus, like I was struggling so much in that class, and I thought it's okay, like I'll just read the book, I'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then it just got to the point where I was in over my head, and eventually, and I was taking certain prereqs that I should not have taken together. And end of sophomore year, I was really questioning, you know, am I gonna be a doctor? Like this whole academic thing, I don't know anymore. Mm-hmm. And one of my classmates had told me about SMDP, and I think it has a different name now, but back then it was the summer medical. Oh, yeah. I have
it's SHPEP now.
Yeah. And before it was summer medical dental education program.
Yep.
And he had done the one at UVA. And so I applied and I had gotten into the program, and it was so, 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 so inspiring.
What was your goal in going to that? Was it just to kind of restart and kind of just refresh your memory as to why you wanted to do this or make sure that you wanted to do this?
Yes. And just being in that kind of environment around people who believe in you and uplift you. Okay. And connecting with students who they were in med school then, but they had struggled academically too, and they're doing fine now. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of clinical opportunities in there as well. And hearing from different clinicians, it was so empowering and exciting. I was like, all right, I can do this. I need to be okay with asking for help. I need to kind of figure out my path for junior and senior year and go from there. And after that point, my GPA did get significantly better, but it wasn't enough, which we'll get to later. But after college was over, it was.
What did you finish college with GPA wise? Do you know?
3.07.
Okay. So not horrendous, but not great.
Right.
And it sounds like an upward trend.
Yeah. And the thing, what would have saved me is that I had, how many AP credits? I had some AP credits. Especially okay. for math that I could have used, and math was like my weakest subject. But my dean, she wasn't exactly supportive of students of color, and she wanted to help students she knew for sure were going to like get into med school. And then like our interactions, it was kind of like, I remember she told me that I should consider other healthcare options because I wasn't going to get into med school. And I was like,
just not supportive.
Right. And that like exacerbated how I was feeling about myself.
Yeah.
And so had I had a supportive dean and had I known I could have used those credits, my GPA would have been much better those first 2 years. Okay. But I'm glad like I struggled so much those 2 years because it made me a better person. And I learned how to get myself out of that academic black hole.
Yeah. So you're at Duke, you go to this, what's now called the Summer Health, Professions. Well, I just said it, SHPEP, the Summer Health Professions Education Program. You kind of get reignited with your desire, your passion, you change your study habits, you figure it out, you have an upward trend. Did you apply to medical school at that point going, just give it a shot, let me see?
So after when I graduated in May 2014, and I decided to apply for fall 2015. And in hindsight, like I should not have applied to med school at that point. But even if someone had told me don't do it, I would have.
You would have done it. Yeah.
Because I was really so focused on the goal.
Yeah.
But me as a person wasn't prepared. Like I thought I was ready, but I wasn't ready like academically and experience wise.
Let's talk about those experiences. So you're at Duke, you're struggling with your classes. You're like, I graduated, time to apply to medical school. Had you been shadowing and getting clinical experience and all that? Or you're like, hey, I watched TV shows when I was younger. I know that this is what I want to do.
It was more like, I wasn't confident in myself because all I could think about was my GPA and not so great first MCAT. And I had the right clinical experience. I just didn't know how to talk about it.
Okay.
And so, and then also maturity. I wasn't unmature, but just knowing, and I also had never like struggled. Like obviously I struggled academically, but I hadn't had like life struggles before.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'm just kind of naive. And I was just used to being in this like college bubble and I was like, oh, everything's gonna work out, it'll be fine, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I didn't really fully consider the magnitude of like applying to med school at that time. And I applied to 25 MD schools and I got 2 interviews. And back then I was a South Carolina resident. And so I ended up getting waitlisted at one school and then I was rejected at one school and I never got off the waitlist, which I was really happy about because I had started applying to post-bacs and I had got into one and I was like, you know what, I had come to terms with that. I wasn't ready academically to go to med school and I wanted to use this opportunity to prove to myself and to admissions committees that yes, I can do well in upper level science classes and do well on this exam.
Okay, so let's pause for a second. So you graduate Duke with a 307 something GPA. You take the MCAT. What was your first MCAT score? Do you know?
It was I took it in June 2014 and it was a 24.
A 24? Okay, so 24 in today's day and age is probably a 497-ish maybe. Just off the top of my head. So again, not a great MCAT score, not a 485. So it's one of those like, what do we do? And looking at, right, I don't want to put you in a bucket, but looking at the averages for Hispanics, for African American, for underrepresented students, their scores are much less. So, and that's right around the scores for African American students, if I remember correctly. So, so you got 2 interviews. Awesome. What do you think happened at those interviews that you didn't get acceptances?
So I also took my second score was in August 2015 and I had submitted, I also applied late too.
Okay.
So I submitted primary, I think early August, something like that.
Okay.
And that score was a 23.
Okay.
And with the interviews, I mean, I prepared for them, but I didn't really prepare as I should have.
Yeah.
Like, there's
just that naive, whatever that word is, being naive, right? Of like, oh, it'll work out. Like, I can talk with people. I'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know how to, like, articulate my experiences in the best manner. And I was also feeling bad about myself because a lot of my friends, like, they were starting med school right then. And here I am, not so great GPA, not so great MCAT. And, like, that's all I thought. Like, for the past, that was 2014. Like, the past 5 or 6 years, that's all I saw myself was as an MCAT score and a GPA. And, like, going into the interviews, it's like, okay, well, my MCAT's low. My GPA is like, okay, why are you interviewing me to reject me?
Yeah.
And having that attitude, like, of course, they're not going to accept someone who's not confident in themselves.
So let me ask you a question. I don't mean this disrespectfully, did you think that they were like pity interviews?
Kind of. Well, actually, one of the schools my mom used to work at. So that helped in my favor. Okay. But I also thought because I was in state,
yeah,
in comparison to out of state, the academic requirements are a little bit lower.
Yeah.
But I thought that I had a good story. And okay. At the time, like, my personal statement and my activities were decently written.
Okay.
And those got me the interviews. But ultimately, like, the interview was like what messed me up.
Okay.
Because I just couldn't articulate my passion for medicine and stop thinking about myself as just two numbers.
Yeah. Okay. And that's super common for students to go in with that knowing, like, why am I here? I'm not academically qualified. Why are you doing this to me? So yeah, I've heard all of those voices in my own head, and I've heard them come out of a student's mouth. So that makes sense. So it sounds like you kind of were preparing to do a post-bac anyway, and you went and did a post-bac. How did you decide what post-bac to do, whether it's a kind of a undergrad type post-bac versus a master's program? What was that thought process?
So I didn't want to retake the prerequisites again because I thought that's not really going to help me. And I already took all of them. Mm-hmm. And what's the point of retaking them? And then I thought I want to go to a post-bac where it's like different classes that I haven't taken and they're graduate level because then they would be more difficult than undergrad. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be beneficial having like my undergrad one row and then like graduate and the second row and see like the difference there.
Yep.
And of course I could have stayed in I could have stayed back home. And things would have been like so set for me financially because my parents had paid for everything. Like I wouldn't have had to worry about that. But I don't know. I was just at the point in my life where I wanted a challenge and I knew challenging myself would make me a better person. And I don't know what I was getting into. Like I did not know what the future was going to hold, but I was ready for a new experience. And so I decided to go to a post-bac program in Southern California through the Claremont Colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience. So my welcome to Southern California was learning that I was going to be living in a house full of people I didn't know. It was five guys. And it was in a low-income neighborhood because my parents, like, were not really going to support this. And it's not that they didn't support me going to a post-bac. They just didn't support the fact that or understand, like, why did I need to go across the country to improve myself? And then I had shipped my belongings. And when I got there, I found out that majority of them were stolen. So that was, like, my opening experience there.
Welcome.
And so I had an ideal living situation. And then my computer died first year. And over winter break, I found out one of the housemates, he overdosed and passed. And I remember telling my dad, that I was over it. Like, I was over my living situation. I was over this whole MCAT thing. Like, I'm not going back. And then he told me, he's like, Taylor, you moved out there for a reason. Like, you need to see it through. And he said, you're not a quitter. And I was like, I know, but this is so hard. Like, what's the point? And I tried to change my flight to just not go back until like February. And it was going to be over $1,000. And I was like, all right, God's telling me something. I got to go back. I got to go back to school.
Yep.
So in spite of all this, like, I did do well academically, but the whole MCAT thing was always a weight over me.
Yeah.
And
let's talk about that. Why do you think the MCAT was, obviously the MCAT's the MCAT, but why for you, do you think you struggled so much with it?
Because it was not the exam. Part of it was the exam, like kind of navigating how to answer those questions. And the other part is me. It was how I thought about it. Because the first time, two times I took it, it was like, my GPA is not so great. I need to really do well in this exam. So I was obsessed with the exam. And I had been obsessed with the exam for like 4 years or so. Mm. And obviously, yeah, it's just a test, but it's a really important exam. And I knew med schools, they looked at that because of step one, all that jazz. And I just had so much anxiety around the exam. And obviously, like, doing practice exams, I was fine. But the actual exam itself, like, I blanked.
Yeah.
And
so practice exam. So going into the test, you thought you were prepared. You were getting the scores that you wanted or needed.
Right.
But then come test day, everything went kaput.
Because it's like, it's do or die. Like,
yeah.
And my personality, it's very black and white. There's no gray area.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I had already had anxiety. Didn't really think it was a problem. But this exam, like, took it to a whole nother level. And I was being a hindrance to myself. Like, I was my own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's how it was. Like, the third time I took it, 495. Fourth time I took it, 499. Fifth time I took it, 501. Nice. And then after the fifth time I took it, I thought, what am I going to do? Like, I don't think I want to go to dental school. I just really can't give up on this whole med school thing. Like, what am I going to do? So I took a break from the whole MCAT thing, like from applying, and just kind of thought, like, do I get a new job? Like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And then I also realized that I need to address my anxiety because it was feeding into other avenues of my life, not only to this test, but just like different aspects of my life. So I started going to a therapist.
Okay.
And let me tell you, therapy is like so insightful and helpful. And initially I was opposed to it. And I had two people before, when I was struggling with MCAT in grad school, they had told me to start going to a therapist. And I was like, nah, I don't need this.
Not for me. I'm good.
Wrong with me.
Yeah.
There was a lot of things wrong with me. And I also came across a quote that said,
let me correct you. Just a little bit of language correction there. There was nothing wrong with you. There were just some things that weren't working well.
Yeah. And I'd always been a very, I was always hard on myself. Like, yeah. That's just how I was. And when I didn't achieve a goal I wanted, it's like, wow, I'm a bad person. Like, I'm a failure. Yeah. And having those kind of self-depreciating thoughts and feelings going on wasn't going to help me get anywhere.
They don't help. Yeah.
It just, I was failing myself.
Yep.
And after the fifth time, I was on BuzzFeed. I was reading some articles and I came across this quote that said, doubt kills more dreams than failure ever will.
Mm.
And I'd always doubted myself. And obviously, like, I'm qualified to get into med school, be a physician, but I didn't feel that. I didn't believe in myself. And after that, I took a break from June 2018 until October 2018 to kind of really think is this what I wanted to do? And if so, I need to figure out this MCAT preparation situation and also start doing more clinical experience.
Yeah.
And I had two study buddies, and having even just one person to do questions with, so impactful. Like, I wish I would have known about that years ago. And then I also started volunteering at a community health clinic. And so being in there, I was like, okay, yes, you can do this. Like, your score may not be what you want it to be, but it is what it is. You're just going to have to move on from that. Mm-hmm. So I took it again, last final time. I told myself this sixth time, it's the last time. And whatever happens, happens. We're just going to apply.
Yeah.
And
what'd you get the last time?
504.
So between the 23 that I think you said you started with and the 504, what were you using to prepare in terms of tutors, courses? What was that process like?
So thankfully, my postdoc program, it's applied life sciences. So because I had already taken the prerequisite classes, it was like the applications of that, including like technology, different assays, things of that nature, which were on the exam. And so that the content of my grad program helped with that. And in grad school, we had Princeton Review, but Princeton Review was like super content heavy. And it's like, I don't need this information. Like, I need to figure out how strategies, like, how do I take this exam? So after doing Princeton Review, my score was 495. And I had applied for fall 2017, that summer 2016, got the same two interviews. And I thought, okay, my GPA is better after 1 year of grad school, you know, maybe I'll get an acceptance. And at that point, I was just desperate to go to school. Like, I didn't really care anything about the school, like student support or anything. I just wanted to get in. Went to those two interviews and was not really confident. And I had done interview prep, but I just wasn't confident in myself. Yeah. So didn't get into those two schools. And I remember my advisor told me, she's like, Taylor, if you have time to worry about not getting into med school, then you have time to worry about taking the MCAT again. So I did a next step with my tutor, Alex Starks. Alex, if you're listening, shout out. He was really made me understand the exam.
Yeah.
And that helped, but I wasn't confident. So of course my score isn't gonna be good. So the fourth time I took it, it was 499.
Okay.
And the fifth time it was 501. So, and all those times, like, it was not the exam. Like, I had prepared for it. I had gone over my questions, figured out why this question was wrong, why it was right. Like, I had done that part. It was just like the anxiety of taking the exam, and then the anxiety of like the anxiety thinking about taking the exam, and the anxiety of taking the exam itself. Like, I couldn't get over it.
Yeah.
And the last time I thought, it is what it is. Like, we're just going to take it, you know, we'll just go from there. And at that time, I had started listening to your podcast, spring 2018. And
what took you so long?
Because what had happened was I had next step, and it was like Blue something. You guys had done this collaboration.
Mm.
And that's when I heard about you.
Okay.
I don't know where, I think my head was just in the clouds. Like, I don't know, but yes, it took me a very long time to find you.
Yep.
And once I did, I was like, I am hooked. Like, have all your podcasts, like the different series on Spotify. Like, I was hooked. And I remember when I got my score back, I was like, ugh, not what I wanted, but we're just going to move forward from there. And I listened to your podcast with students who had overcome obstacles and multiple cycles and whatnot. And I remember you had said you need to have a good enough GPA, a good enough MCAT score, but it's not the end of everything. Like, you need to also have a good story and a personality. So that kind of gave me confidence. And I had also started doing I wanted to, one of my goals, even though I didn't know how the cycle was going to go, was understanding the social side of medicine. Mm-hmm. So I started doing different volunteer work with vulnerable populations, and I started working with incarcerated populations and DV survivors, and understanding medicine in that aspect. It was super impactful and enlightening, and I was able to incorporate that in my secondaries.
Awesome. So yeah. What was it like going on your umpteenth interview and finally getting that email or phone call that you had an acceptance?
So first, my very first interview was, or I should say my first interview invite was Arizona.
Okay. And, for this last cycle.
Yeah.
Okay.
For fall 2020.
Okay.
My first invite was Arizona, and I was like, oh my gosh, yes. And my second one was Quinnipiac. Third invite was Morehouse. Fourth was USIS. Fifth, Michigan State. Sixth, University of South Carolina. Seventh.
Like I said, not one, not two, not three.
Seventh was Eastern Virginia. Yeah. And then eighth, Wayne State, nine, UCR, and then 10, New York Medical College. So when they started coming in, I was like, you know what? He was right. Like, MCAT, GPA, you need to have good enough, but your story is what matters.
Yeah.
And my one of my student workers at the office, he had like a really high MCAT score, but he'd only gotten three interviews and he was waitlisted at all those schools. And I was like, you know what? Having personality, having good story, and like overcoming obstacles, like that's really impactful. Yep. And having confidence going into interview and knowing that my GPA and MCAT at that point like was irrelevant. I never experienced that before.
Yeah.
And like walking in there knowing that I belonged was so empowering. And my first interview was Quinnipiac.
Yeah.
And
so let me clarify just so I understand what you're trying to tell me. So are you saying because of the podcast, hearing how important your story is, how it's not just stats, that gave you the confidence to walk into the interview knowing that those aren't an issue, stop thinking about them and just be yourself? Is that what you're saying?
That, and I realized that if anyone was going to believe in me, I had to believe in myself first.
Perfect.
And no one wants an unconfident or a nervous or an anxious position. Like,
yep.
I don't want you touching me. Like, if you aren't sure about what you're doing.
Yep.
And knowing that, I thought I have to be confident. I have to believe in myself because we need more people of color in medicine. And I'm failing myself by not. I'm feeling myself in my community by not putting my best foot forward.
Yep.
And having confidence and like being myself. And my first interview was so amazing. And I had gotten my first acceptance November 18th. Because I got the email, I was reading, I had just woken up, I was about to go to work, read it on my phone. I was like, and I had saw like admissions in the update folder on my email. And I was like, dang, it's probably rejection. So I read it and I was like, what? And then I read it again. I was like, oh yes, Taylor's going to med school finally. I was so excited. And then that same week I had gone to the domestic violence shelter that I volunteer at. And I had gone on a different day than what I usually go to. And I had met one of the volunteers. He teaches anatomy at Western University in Pomona. And he was asking me about myself. I gave him like a super brief overview of like the life and times of Taylor. And he's like, oh, well, did you apply to Western? I was like, no, like I heard it's kind of competitive. And he's like, are you sure? Like we're still accepting applications. And I interview students and I'm so tired of hearing and talking to students who haven't overcome any obstacles, live really close to Pomona in Southern California, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And he's like, if you want, I can get you an interview. And I was like, thank you. I'm really going to consider it. Let me get back to you. Yeah. But just the fact that I was being my natural self and like not trying to be someone else and just sharing my story, the fact that that could have gotten me an interview, like, that's amazing. Like, I'm really proud of myself for getting,
yeah,
becoming confident and seeing life outside of an exam.
Yeah, that's awesome. For the student out there listening to this who may be in their second application cycle, third application cycle, third or fourth MCAT, what words of wisdom do you have for them to help them overcome all of the obstacles now that you have overcome them?
Advice piece number one, don't be afraid to fail. Like, failure is in the moment. You don't feel good. Like, it doesn't feel good to be failure or experience challenges that you think you can't overcome. Mm-hmm. And if it makes them feel any better, it took me 6 years to get into med school and 6 years of having the MCAT hanging over my head, not being able to enjoy Thanksgiving or Christmas or my birthday because that I was always preparing and obsessed with that exam. And to just know that sometimes failure presents opportunities and experiences that you otherwise wouldn't have experienced, mm-hmm, had you not failed. And I'm just so grateful that I experienced all this. Even in the moment, it was very trying and it made me question myself and my motivation. But just know that your community needs you, healthcare needs you, and to keep yourself going. And secondly, learn to have an identity outside of medicine, mm-hmm, and fall in love with yourself. One of my interviewers at Wayne State, he's so amazing. He's in neuroradiology. He was in the peak of his life, no risk factors at all. And he ended up having a clot in his carotid and he had a stroke. Mm-hmm. And he can't practice medicine anymore because his cognitive function is a little bit impacted, but he still wants to be engaged in the medical community and whatnot. So he interviews and he's doing really well for only having a stroke a year and a half ago, and he can walk a little bit, but just like having that kind of experience and knowing that something you worked so hard to achieve and it's taken away from you, like, who are you outside of that? And that's something that I always struggled with. Like, who am I outside of medicine? Who am I outside of the MCAT?
Yeah.
So I obviously, like, it's an ongoing battle to try to figure yourself out, but being okay with who you are, not being a doctor, like if that were to be taken away, is super important. And to just encourage them to keep doing hobbies or sports or anything that they love and fall in love with yourself, because that's who you're stuck with at the end of the day.
And I want to circle back. Usually I'll end the conversation there, but I want to circle back to something you said very early on that I think a lot of students probably heard, and I heard as well, but I didn't ask it earlier. You mentioned not telling your extracurriculars properly, not the language that I use is not reflecting on them properly, yes, to talk about, yes, them. How did you flip that switch and what did that look like?
So for this last cycle, I did a lot of reflection preparation. And I remember I interviewed my mom and then my dad's sister to get their different perspectives on healthcare in urban environment and then rural environment. Cause like I knew it, but I didn't know everything because I was younger. And so I reflected on that and then just putting it in a different context. So for example, working in the community health center, it's like, okay, yes, you know, you're working with people of underserved backgrounds and whatnot, but what else are you doing? So in that aspect, it was like a large Latinx population and a lot of them are undocumented. So I was able to talk about the challenges that they have in terms of income, language barrier, how that affects them trying to seek care, or the physical and social determinants of health, and incorporating those components into each activity. Okay. That's what I did differently.
Yeah. So much more reflection, thinking about everything you're doing. Good. Yeah. Versus I'm assuming what most students do maybe is what you did at the beginning was just a lot of, I did this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Show, don't tell.
Show, don't tell. Where have I heard that before? Well, awesome. Taylor, I'm so excited for your success, for your future journey. Obviously, as we're recording this, we're in the middle of this COVID-19 pandemic. So yes. All hands on deck moving forward. And students can see right now what it truly is like to be a physician's be a physician on the front lines, and yeah. And students who are still on this path and still want to do this, your eyes are open. So thank you for coming on this journey and sharing your journey with us.
Of course. Stay tuned to where I end up. I really don't know where I'm going, but wherever it is, I'm just really excited. And unfortunately, COVID, we may not have white coat, which I'm really sad about because I've been looking forward to that for 6 years. And obviously maybe they'll have like an in-person ceremony later. Yeah. I'm just, aside from all that, like to be going to school, med school, I'm just so happy and grateful and
I want to ask you one more question. Right? I should have ended the interview by now, but I want to ask one more question because again, it came up earlier and I never asked it. Do you think having your mom who's a physician, having your dad who's a nurse, having them in healthcare, do you think that puts you at a disadvantage to try to tell your story even better to overcome the, oh, she's just the daughter of healthcare workers?
Yes. So my second cycle applying, that did come up, but I didn't know how to talk about it mm-hmm. and articulate that my journey had nothing to do with my parents.
Yeah.
And I had gotten kind of defensive with her.
Yeah.
And I had read in your book, like, don't ever get defensive with interviewers because you're going to lose. Yep. And so obviously, like, I didn't get into that school. And I mean, yes, I'm grateful to have parents in healthcare because I've learned a lot from them, but it was never my motivation going to med school. And if anything, or going into medicine, if anything, it should have made me not want to go because like the lifestyle is hard. Like it's difficult. Yeah. And, it never, like after that interview, it never came up ever again.
Yeah.
Because they could clearly see like my journey is completely different than my parents. And to be honest, they don't really have anything to do with this.
Yeah.
So never an issue anymore. Yeah. And if they were like leaning along that question, I would say, you know, yes, my parents are in healthcare and it was inspiring to see them build their careers and whatnot, but my motivation stems from like my experiences and what I saw growing up and how healthcare system needs to be revamped and become more just for others.
Yeah. And that's the perfect, right? Students who need to overcome the fact that their parents are in healthcare typically don't have the experiences to show the school, look, this is my journey. These are my experiences and not just like, oh, look, I have a 4.0 and a 5.20. You should accept me because my mom's a doctor too. So that's awesome. Thank you. Thank you again for sharing your story. Congrats. And I'm excited to follow you on your journey.
Thank you.
All right. So there you have it. Again, Taylor sharing her story of fighting her way to get into medical school, doing what she needed to do to get in to medical school, never giving up to get in to medical school. And I hope that is you right now and in the future. I hope you have a great week. Keep fighting. Keep staying safe. I love you all. See you next time here on The Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.